Welcome to Gen Z Hoops, the Gen Z basketball, coaching, and sports business show. On this podcast, you'll learn from professional players, coaches, and executives from all over the world and see the court in a brand new way. And now, joining you courtside, your Gen Z host, John Hartophilus.
Howdy, what's going on?
Hi, how you doing, John?
Doing great. Really excited to get you on the show. It was awesome meeting you that last day of Summer League. Shout out to Ryan Pannone for introducing us. I know he kind of did that to me a bunch of times. He would always just be like, John, like, come over here. Did you get this person's number yet? No, take like, so he's the best. He's, for anyone listening, Ryan Pannone's the GOAT. But awesome meeting you through him and getting to do the show. I'm super excited for it. And you're actually in, you're in day three of training camp. So you're actually in the Wolves video room right now. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm in the video room right now. Day three, we're getting better each day, and it's been really fun so far.
That's got to be fun. That must be such an exciting feeling with the season coming up and all this great things happening. And there's so much talk about the Timberwolves, right? I'm sure that's what you're thinking about all day, every day. But there was a start to this whole journey for you. It's a fun one, right? You crazy one. You moved 26 times as a kid, like always on the move, always changing. But basketball is always a big part of your life. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe where that start happened for you?
You know, I probably couldn't even remember the start. When I was born, my dad was still playing in the NBA. So I've really kind of, since day one, been growing up around the game and really been in love with it since I could remember. And really outside of family, and you mentioned me moving 26 times, it's really been the only thing that's just super consistent. And that's kind of where my dream of always being around basketball stemmed from. Just, hey, this is the one consistent thing in my life besides my family. Like, this is what I want to do. And I also think it helps with just kind of the roller coaster of coaching. There's going to be so many moves and I'm not scared of that. You know, I'm not scared to go from Cali to Florida to freezing Minnesota. So it's something that there's really no fear. And I think it kind of really helps, you know, my path as a coach and not being scared to go anywhere. But yeah, I first fell in love with the game, just being around it, but then it kind of graduated into playing and kind of really dedicated my life to that and didn't have many offers coming out of high school. Only one D1 offer to Cal State Bakersfield and went there, had some success and kind of wanted to find a better fit academically. So I transferred to Stetson University, which is in Florida, sat out a year, played. And actually my fourth year of playing, I was able to take a class taught by Stan Van Gundy.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a sports business class. I wasn't even a sports business major, but once I got the secret was out that he was going to be teaching it, I know I had to take it. And, you know, I'd known that I wanted to be around basketball as I was playing, but after taking that class and he really kind of opened my eyes to, hey, you know, more and more females are trying to get in the NBA. And right now, a lot of them are kind of retired WNBA or people that I've been coaching on the women's side forever. But, you know, I think it'd be super beneficial if you know, women started kind of from grassroots, kind of like coaches like Eric Spoelstra who started in the video room. So from there, you know, I was like, okay, like I'm all in. I'm going to really try to get into the NBA. And that's where I want to kind of set my goal. Had another year of playing, decided to transfer for my fifth year to Santa Clara. So got my master's there, played my final year. That summer before I started at Santa Clara, went to summer league, met a bunch of people, a bunch of coaches. Their biggest advice for me was learn the video, learn sports code. So my last year at Santa Clara, when I was playing, I also interned with their men's team, learned sports code a little bit, kind of interning slash volunteer. And then after that, I, you know, really was trying to get into coaching, but COVID had hit. So I had some interviews with some NBA teams. Nothing kind of panned out. A lot of the positions I was going for were cut just due to budget and kind of the everything being shrunk in terms of the staff. So then I just started emailing every G League GM, video coordinator, head coach, and landed with Iowa Wolves and was able to do a season with them. It was only about 2 months, but it was awesome. It was in a bubble in Orlando, so I lucked out again with the location. But yeah, that's kind of been my path so far. Was able to kind of make the jump from Iowa to the Timberwolves this year, which has been amazing so far. I'm in my third week, but I'm learning so much. And I'm really blessed to be here.
There's so much to unpack there. And what is this? Like, we're talking about.
I know. I feel like I went on forever, but it's a crazy story.
It is so cool. There's like literally 2 years to unpack there, but there's like oh my God, there's like enough layers in those 2 years for like a 10-year career, 15-year career, and all those other people I've had on. So, okay, let's backtrack a little bit. I'm thinking like that clash with Stan Van Gundy, that kind of said light bulb off of, okay, this is what I want to do. What was your, so you kind of jumped to all these interviews and stuff. What was the first step, right? You're still playing, but how do you formulate, like you mentioned Summer League, how do you formulate, this is how I'm gonna go about chasing this dream?
So really it was Coach Stan. Like he's been a mentor to my dad. And after I was able to get closer with him through that class, like our families are super close. Like all of his kids have been friends with my brothers and sisters and me, like kind of throughout my lifetime. My dad played for Stan in Miami. So like, it's kind of like decades of a relationship being built. So I've really been able to lean on him whenever I have questions about anything career wise. And he was like, you have to go to Summer League, like, and just hooked me up with like 7 different meetings with like Billy Donovan, Steve Clifford, like Eric, like just everyone you could possibly want to meet as like a young aspiring coach. I was able to meet with them even before I was done playing. So I was able to just kind of absorb all this information and get so much advice from these kind of top tier head coaches and people who are in positions that I want to be in someday. So Stan has been great to me just in terms of advice. Like I'm always kind of texting and bothering him and asking questions. And he's just awesome about really being candid and telling me this is what you got to do. And, you know, if Stan tells you to do something, it's probably something you got to do.
It's a pretty, definitely good ideas. And having mentors like that just in general is something that you number one, should look for them. And then once you have them, keep them close. And right, I definitely utilize them as a resource going forward. And it's helped you out so much in these last 2 years. I can only imagine, right? That's so cool. But then thinking a little bit more about like you kind of skipped over that part too, which I think is super cool, and how you ended up with the Iowa Wolves. You were sending out a lot of cold emails. Now that's how I kind of do, that's how I run this show. I mean, it's cold LinkedIn messages, cold emails. You, I got to meet in person, which was awesome. But for most people, especially before like Summer League, I never had the option of doing this. Was always all these cold messages. How did you do that? And like, how did one of them finally work out?
So besides like kind of the contacts that like my dad was able to give me or Stan, like, and this is kind of a trick that like I tell anyone who's like, oh, how are you reaching out to all these people? If you just kind of do research online, like you can find a lot of emails. And once you find those emails, just kind of build out your email and contact list. And, or even if you like know one email from one team, like then you have like the @
you're giving
whatever
away the,
or
you're
like
giving away the secret.
I'm giving all the secrets, and then like like the first, like maybe it's the first letter of their first name and their last name, and then the @bulls.com or something like that. So, and then sometimes you'll get like a bounce back, like this email doesn't exist. Like that happens to me all the time. But you are able to like at least get like, you know, a good 60-100 emails through, and you know, you won't get a lot of replies, but some people do reply, and sometimes they reply like, sorry, we don't have anything for you, or like it's just not going to work out. But like usually you'll get like, if you email every single team, like I'd be surprised if you don't get at least one email back, and sometimes that's all it takes to kind of get your foot in the door.
All you need is one, and it just keeps on growing and growing and growing. And now you kind of get good at it. Now you kind of know what to say. And now people are, now people know who you are. It's pretty cool feeling. But right, so now you get a positive response in the cold email. You land the job with the Iowa Wolves. Now you're a 22, 23 year old first year coach. Like, how did you find your voice there? You're the new coach. How did you establish yourself in the locker room as someone that knew your stuff and could prove to people that, hey, look, I know what I'm doing. I might be young, but I'm ready.
So I would say like, once you first join a new team, like you kind of want to relax the first week and really just take in as much info as possible. You don't want to go into your first practice and just start kind of barking at guys or making corrections. Like you want to actually get to know them and also get to know their game, and then have them also get to know you, because if they don't know anything about you, they're not going to listen. Especially like with me, like I don't look like your stereotypical coach, and it's kind of a new thing for a woman to be on the men's side. So it really kind of takes like a little bit of adjustment period, just getting to know the player, them getting to know you. And then from there, and once you have a little bit of a foundation and a little bit of a relationship, then you can kind of start to, you know, hey, like you've got to finish that. Hey, like you got to just build up to that point where then you really say something that's of value to them, that'll help their game out. And they're like, oh, wow. Like, yeah. And then it's like, I can listen to her from now on. So that would be my advice. You don't want to be the person who just comes in and with like their hair on fire and just acting crazy. You want to get to know the guys first. I think that's really the most important first step.
Definitely. And then you've had both roles in your new role too, basketball associate and video associate. Associate's mm-hmm. been present both, but I know you do so, right? You do so much, whether mm-hmm. there's, I'm sure, a bunch of scouting involved in that, a bunch of player development involved in that. What was kind of, let's take it back to that first year in Iowa. What were maybe your initial roles coming into that G League staff?
So I kind of had my hands on everything, whether it was laundry, passing out meals. And then it was more of the fun stuff too, like helping out in practice, cutting film, live coding games, all the basketball stuff, which is obviously really fun, but kind of in order to get my foot in the door, like I had to be willing to do more of the stuff that wasn't so much fun, like more on the ops side. But you know, at the end of the day, like if you're helping a team, like that's always a great feeling. And I was really happy to do all those things. But yeah, I had my hands on really every part of a team, like coaches meetings, video, doing play calls for other teams, and also staying up until 12 and making sure all the game uniforms are clean for a back-to-back. So really, really everything, but it also gave me diversified knowledge of everything that goes into how a team operates, which was really fun and really beneficial for me.
Huge, right? So now you kind of know a little about everything, and you can kind of do that at the highest level. What does it look like maybe for you in the G League bubble? So you get to go right back to Florida, and you're there in the G League bubble. What was your day-to-day like in there with games and everything like that?
So when we first got there, first we went to like in market is what they call it. When we went up here to Minneapolis and we had a 7-day quarantine. So really not much interaction with coaches or players outside of Zoom. We literally had workouts on Zoom inside of a hotel room. So you really didn't see many people face to face. From there, we fly to Orlando, have another week quarantine where it's more Zoom stuff, but obviously a lot better weather in January. So got to peep outside your room a little bit. And then from there, we were on a 7-day training camp. So that's, you know, 1 to 2 practices a day, maybe another Zoom meeting with the coaches, and kind of just building up that interaction face-to-face with both players and coaches. And then after that training camp, it was really every other day we had a game. We played 15 games in just a couple weeks, and wake up, coaches meeting, maybe get some film work done, go to practice or shoot around. And then kind of the rest of the day is revolved around getting to the game, then kind of post-game stuff, meals, treatment, coaches meeting, more film, a ton of film. Your whole day is kind of revolved around getting film in whenever you don't have kind of an obligation. But yeah, the days were crazy. They were packed with things, but it was super fun. Like being in kind of like something similar to the NBA bubble, like it was really cool experience. And it kind of felt like a super long AU tournament, which, you know, those are always fun. And it's also cool to have all the teams in one location. Like, I think that's something that we probably won't see for a really long time. And it was cool to be a part of that.
You're the first person I've spoken to that says described it as a super long AAU tournament. I've had people describe it as like the best group project I'd never want to do again, or maybe similar. But AAU tournaments are fun. Like those are like
AAU tournaments are fun. They're exhausting. They are exhausting. But no, they're super fun because it's like so many teams in one place. Like that's such a cool experience to kind of just be walking to lunch or walking to dinner every day, and you're passing people that you've just played. And like it was a really cool environment for me. I really enjoyed it, you know, staying at Disney, like that's super nice. The weather was awesome. Like it was like a little mini paradise. And you know, whenever there's basketball, that's always, you know, a fun time.
So much about that just has to be a lot of fun. And I love hearing that you really saw it in a positive way, yeah, thinking about that. But the biggest takeaway from that, you said it a bunch of times. I mean, I had a word count how many times you said film. Maybe probably over 5, right? How many times you said the word film. And actually, Menelik's a good friend. We met each other at Summer League, and I saw you go on his show and give a full film breakdown. If anyone hasn't seen that episode, go check that out on Run It Back. That was super fun watching you break down one of the games from the bubble last year. And you mentioned some pretty cool concepts, but the main thing I wanted to ask you about was the role of, right, a game being your scout or watching a game back and taking that in. What are maybe some of the main takeaways, not obviously not from that game, but just from games in general, that you maybe might be looking for when you're doing either when you're watching film over again or when you're preparing for a game like that?
So with my responsibilities in the bubble, it was more personnel based. So when I was watching teams, I would just kind of take 50 to 100 clips off Synergy, And this also might change over the years. So this is kind of my first year into it, but I would take 50 to 100 clips of kind of their most recent possessions. And once I had those clips, I would just write down, okay, how are they scoring? Are they scoring off a pick and roll? Are they scoring off of a transition three? Are they scoring at the basket, right hand, left hand, or inside hand, right, like Euro step? Like, and once you kind of get to like 25, 30, like you'll see trends right away. Like they're only scoring 2 to 3 ways and with their right hand or only on this side of the floor. So it was really kind of interesting for me to see that, you know, we look at all these great players, but once you look at their tendencies and you think they're scoring every which way, but it actually is broken down to only a couple of different actions that they're really scoring off of. So that was my process personnel wise. Post-game, it was a little bit different, especially because I wasn't technically an assistant or a head coach. But my biggest thing would kind of just be looking at, all right, well, what are our weaknesses? Like, how did the other team beat us? Was it usually, it's narrowed down to like, okay, offensive boards, turnovers, poor transition defense is usually kind of huge concepts. And a lot of things I touched on in that video interview with Menelik was, hey, it really drawed down, you know, a couple simple things, why we lost and making sure that those things are highlighted in kind of post-game film with the team.
It's crazy how tidying up one or two actions can totally change a game, right? Swing so many points in one or two in one team's favor. I mean, it's even better thinking about it. I mean, the tendencies, how you're able to pick those out from just a few possessions is pretty startling, right? You would always think that, wow, like the game's so complex. There's so many different ways to score. But in reality, right, it's simple, right? When you really break it down, like there's a simple way to attack everything and you're breaking that down on film, which is so cool. I mean, you spoke about a couple of things that you're charting maybe live as the game is going on in terms of paint touches and box outs. How are you maybe watching, like how are you maybe charting that as the game's going on and making sure, right, you're keeping up with the action, but also charting it? And then even on top of that, how are you correcting that even or showing the coaches so they can correct it?
So usually a coaching staff will have kind of a couple things that they're looking at or they know the other team is good at that they want to chart or that they know that their team is usually like it's a weak spot for their. So like for us in Iowa, each coach kind of had something that they tracked and maybe it was like another separate thing that they did on their own that wasn't assigned by the head coach that they would also track. So if you're only looking for 1 to 2 things to track, it kind of makes it simple. And after a couple games of tracking that one specific thing, you get pretty good at being able to track and also kind of making other observations while watching the game. For me, if I wasn't live coding, because that was split up between me and another one of my coworkers, we would live code the game just offense, defense, so that the coaches were able to kind of watch the games quicker right after the game. So yeah, it was either tracking. I think my thing was paint touches. So I would track that and that wasn't too hard. But yeah, as long as it's kind of like stratified between each coach, kind of what they're tracking, it makes it a lot easier to kind of get into a good flow and also make other observations as well.
I mean, right, it's so awesome to think about how those things can, right, really help, and just those those small nuances, right? You're keeping track of something can change up a whole game. I've been doing it with my, well, now JV team, but my freshman team before, and like that never happened before for a team at that level. So like I'm charting this stuff and like all the coaches are like, what, like you're charting it for the freshman team? And I'm like, yeah. And like, look, I can correct it now because I can prove it to them that this is what's happening on the court. Obviously you're at a whole different level, but it's cool seeing that happen for you guys too. If anyone knows you, right, and obviously if you listen to Run It Back, you'll hear right away, but you are very passionate about setting proper screens. So like, I remember you got very passionate and very fiery talking about just how important it is to set proper screens and a lot of these different actions. What, like, how would you maybe go about teaching someone how to set a proper screen or really doing it? Because that opens up everything. If screens aren't set right, nothing works.
I would kind of just break it down to kind of 3 things. Footwork, really, like your foot placement on the screen, timing, like knowing when to come up, and then also the speed of how you're coming up to the screen. So you want to make sure you're not coming up too early and that you're hitting the defender at the right moment so that they're caught off guard. And then you also want the angle of the screen in the right direction so that when they do try to get over or get under it, it's like at the worst possible angle so that they're really getting hit. And then also when you're moving up to the screen, like you want to be really quick again to catch them off guard.
And then another thing, it's fascinating, right, to think about the nuance. Setting a screen might be so simple. Set a screen, pick and roll. Like, it sounds like, but there's so many nuances to make it effective. But you mentioned chugging, and that's a phrase I never heard before I heard you say. Mm-hmm. So can you please just explain that for our listeners that maybe like me were like, what? And then you explained it. I'd say, oh, that's a pretty cool concept.
It's funny because we had a practice or a training camp yesterday, and kind of one of my main points in my post-practice edit. We call it tagging here. It's not jogging, it's tagging.
Yeah, okay, I'm gonna make that correction.
Yeah, basically, if there's a cutter or even with our practice, it was a kind of a roll man, you want to just hit them usually with your forearm or kind of with your shoulder and your body and kind of skidding that person who's cutting through the lane or just kind of moving through the offense and kind of knocking them off their path. And that also kind of like takes away from the timing of the offense and kind of just disrupts the overall flow for the offensive team.
And those, right, it's funny that it's such a quick split second bang, bang kind of thing. And that might mess, that might blow up an entire action. So it's cool thinking about that. I mean, one, I know I'm hitting you with a lot of these little like,
No, it's cool. I love it.
One of them that Sam Newman Beck mentioned on my show when he came on a couple right before Summer League was how a lot of times last year he'd do this kind of 3-for-2 thing instead of a 2-for-1 to kind of make it. I mean, did he ever, because he told me he does that and that sounds super innovative and super experimental. Did that actually, you guys actually do that last year?
Yeah, no. So most teams right now, like a big trend is kind of going 2-for-1. So 3-for-2, that's another like just knowing the time and score and trying to kind of steal a possession where you can. That is definitely something that we tried to do. But yeah, like most teams will try to go like 2-for-1 and just kind of steal a possession based on the timing where it's kind of like less time, but kind of shoving in possessions within kind of 10 to 15 seconds or 10 to 20 seconds and kind of just maximizing the time you have left in a quarter or end a half or end a game.
Well, I hope our listeners enjoyed that 10-minute like crash course on like all the little like, you know, tidbits, nuances that you're really passionate about, because that was a lot of basketball really quick. I'll have the show notes down below. So if people are like, wait, that was really cool, like 5 minutes ago, go back, look at it. You can still catch it, even if you missed it the first time. But really fun thing about all those little things. And right, there's so much more for you. Like, it's crazy. You obviously, right, you just spit out all these different nuances and there's so much more for you to learn in the years going forward. What's maybe been the biggest change or the biggest thing you've learned going into this, not just right year two, now with the Timberwolves, what's maybe the biggest thing that's maybe been the difference for you? In just the last year, and it's crazy thinking about just 1 year can make a difference. There's 20 more years, you know, plus down the line.
So I think the biggest thing for me was especially being like a college player and on the woman's side, it's also like a lot different. And I've mentioned this on a couple other like podcasts I've done, and it is just like a little bit slower and it's a lot more technical. And there's, I would also say there's different kinds of strategy in the women's game and in college in general with a longer shot clock, like 30 seconds. And with here it's 24 and actions are so much quicker. And the biggest thing I've done the past couple of weeks, just being with the T-Wolves, a big responsibility I have is kind of doing play calls for other teams. And a lot of the actions in the NBA are just so much quicker. So that's been a big adjustment for me, just kind of learning all those play calls. And sometimes it's not even a play call, it's just a read, but you have to know the specific action they're doing it, whether it's a pass and come off for a DHO, like just really quick actions that teams do that I'm not used to seeing in the college game or actions that I never specifically did when I was playing. So learning those things and just adjusting overall to the skill level of the NBA game, it's been super fun because it's the best basketball that, you know, exists in this world. So it's a dream for me, but it is different and it is an adjustment, but it's been really fun and learning all these offensive concepts has been really, really cool.
I'm so excited for this whole season to play out, and it's fast coming fast upon us pretty soon. So you're on day 3 now. It's crazy to think about all these days coming up and how exciting those are going to be. Whether it's the Wolves, the Iowa Wolves. I mean, the Iowa Wolves aren't coming to New York to see the Long Island Nets, unfortunately, with the schedule. But hopefully, right, I'll definitely be seeing you, whether it's the showcase or it's Summer League next year. Caring for either of those to happen, and really appreciate you coming on the show and dropping all this basketball knowledge on us. Your story has been incredible in just the 2 or 3 years that you've been doing this. And there's so much more to come. So really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much, Addie.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been awesome. Thank you so much, John.
Thanks for listening to Gen Z Hoops. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe on Instagram, LinkedIn, and all major social media platforms at Gen Z Hoops. You can tune in and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and every other podcast platform on the planet. Get ready for the next episode.